Groot FM 90.5.
Dis Liesel Pieters met In Ons Bloed hier op Groot FM 90.5 voor het Ellie Goulding met 16 en dit is nou 12 minute na 4. Goeiemiddag en welkom as jy dalk nou eers op die groot trek inskakel. Dit is lekker om sommer net vanmiddag in hierdie uur met 'n baie besonderse persoon te gesels en dit is Dr. Gerard Labuschagne, kliniese sielkundige, forensiese en ondersoekende sielkundige wat baie ondervinding het in die geskiedenis ook hoof van die SAPD se ondersoekende sielkunde afdeling. Dr. Gerard, it's so wonderful to have you on the line. How are you doing?
Hi, Thunder. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Just tell us, we were wondering, lately there has been so many news, especially in the USA, concerning mass shootings. You know, if you think about just in 2024, there was Perry High School shooting, there was the Kansas City Parade shooting, there was that Abundant Life Christian School shooting just now in December. What motivates someone to attack a large group of people?
Well, there's first thing we have to just sort of realize that there's no one sort of biographical profile of people who do these types of attacks. The research has just shown that they come from very, very different backgrounds, different ages, different circumstances. So we must be careful about, you know, saying there's the kind of person who does this. But what there typically is kind of behaviors leading up to these events, which are quite common.
Okay.
But you asked sort of what kind of motivates people. In many of these instances, based on the research, the FBI and the U.S. Secret Service has done quite a lot of interesting research on these topics of mass violence incidences. And what we typically find is that a lot of these people have, 50% of them have their own personal grievances, something that they perceived was done wrong to them. It could be in the workplace, could be in the school, it could be bullying, etc. And that's often what motivates these individuals to go out and take this sort of very targeted type of revenge, I suppose you could say. So that's 50% of them. Of course, on the other side, you've got the people who might be inspired by these ideologies. And as you saw, some of this could be, just for lack of a better word, the general ISIS kind of inspired, radicalized, extremist religious views. And then they then sort of go and find the most appropriate target. But the other 50% that I mentioned, firstly, the target is often very something personal and that they have an association with. That's why it might be in the workplace. It might be in the school where the person goes or used to go to school. So there is often some kind of anchor point that guides those people to choose. But as we saw now with the New Orleans killing, you know, that person seems to have been self-radicalized, ISIS-inspired, and he then set out trying to find the most appropriate place where he thought would be the most effective place for him to go and commit his violent act. He didn't necessarily have a personal grievance with that particular area necessarily.
I also saw, Dr. Gerald, that for some of these instances, many of these cases have been coming with a hashtag No Lives Matter, which is a group of extremists who causes violence through their acts. And it's just a spin on the Black Lives Matter, in which they says that no lives matter. So I think that is the other part of them, which you said, it's not someone that necessarily has a personal relation to what happened, but it is a belief of theirs, which they now think that they have the right to just go and hurt someone.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen this, and it's either going to be anti-government, it's going to be anti-Semitic, it's going to be, I mean, the one in Germany in December last year was a guy who was sort of anti-immigration.
Yeah.
Although he, ironically, he himself came from that part of the world. He sort of had to turn around in his views. Mm. But another one that we've seen appearing quite a number of times over the past few years is this kind of misogynistic, this sort of anti-woman. And there's a sort of group of people, if you go online and you look for them, called the incels, I-N-C-E-L. And this is a sort of this loose group that started to form on the internet of people who kind of have this very negative attitude towards females. And often view themselves as unjustifiably being unsuccessful in dating women, and you know, women are very sort of characteristically superficial and selfish, and they kind of find each other. And some of these violent attacks, like in Toronto many years ago, and the Isla Vista case in California a number of years ago, were kind of inspired by this type of viewpoint. The same with the Virginia Tech shooting, which was now, I think, almost 20 years ago. That guy almost also had this attitude of, you know, you snobby rich people, but also, you know, you women who think you're better than me and, you know, reject me, etc. So they find these groups, unfortunately, nowadays on the internet, and they're often sort of contributes to them finding people who share the same ideas, and that kind of just sort of pushes them further down the road to what they do.
So there's no specific psychological profile or a classification for somebody who goes from and depending on what motivates them, either way, getting to the place where they can actually take up a gun and shoot into a mass amount of people.
No, I mean, we had the guy at the Mandalay Bay shooting in Las Vegas about 5-6 years
ago. Yes, I remember that.
He was sort of, I think he was in his late 60s. So you'll have from young people in high school to, you know, people who are like that person, Paddock, who was, I think, as I said, in his 60s. So that's why we say we don't sort of have this
general
view of this is what this person looks like. Because the danger of that is people start to say, well, this person that's come to their attention, they don't fit that profile. We're going to ignore him.
Yeah.
And what the sort of research rather says is most of these people exhibit very similar behaviors in the lead up to committing such acts. So we should be looking for those kind of behaviors. So look for behaviors rather than trying to fit someone into a box and say, well, they fit that box, he's a danger, or they don't fit that box, because we realize that there are too many boxes. So we say we typically see them that before the incident, they've exhibited behaviors that's actually raised concerns amongst friend and family and coworkers. But people don't kind of know what to do with it, or they don't take it seriously, or they don't realize what it is, or there's no policy in place in that company to report these things to, and that a competent group of people would then look further to see whether there's a risk. You know, they have a lot of physical, aggressive, intimidating behaviors in their history. A lot of them, as I said, are part of these sort of groups that believe in conspiracies and hateful ideology. And that's often stuff that they verbalize to people in general, in their social media networks, etc. Mental health is not really the biggest risk here, because, again, we have to be careful about creating the impression that people with mental illness are going to become violent.
Yes.
But we often do see that half of these people do have mental health stresses. You know, things aren't going well with these people. They might have a level of depression, suicidality. So again, and those are things we would say, you know, those people who are expressing those in general should be looked into, because of course those are people that are struggling. But that can be also part of this bigger sort of indicators that could raise concern.
So that also implies that somebody could be mentally healthy, really, and do a certain type of behavior that they think is the right thing to do, that's motivated in that way.
Absolutely. I mean, again, they feel justified by these acts. Obviously, those that are part of bigger groups, the group helps make it feel justified, because you're talking to people who support what you're doing and say it's right, and then it's good to go out and kill people for this, whether it's a religious reason or for a political reason. So you're getting that kind of people that are kind of helping you go down that pathway to that targeted violent incident. So that's, I guess, you know, not helpful, of course, in those particular instances. And some people just on their own start to feel, you know, they're not interacting with anybody else, they're not on social media, and just feel that this is, for whatever reasons, right and justifiable. Of course, in the States, you do kind of almost get this subculture of wanting to be a mass murderer. So you'll see a lot of these guys who release manifestos before or after it comes out, they often refer to previous mass murderers, which the Columbine shooters, I think in 1999, are the most two referred to mass shooters out of all of them.
Sure.
And you'll find people referring to that guy from New Zealand.
So they
or
sort
referring
of,
to this one.
So they sort of get inspired by previous events or previous people who sort of been almost a sort of a hero in the media, even if it's in a negative sense.
Absolutely. So inspired, but it also almost becomes like it's a career goal. I want to be the next one. I want to be the one who outdid that one in terms of body count, etc. So it's literally come almost like a career occupation, it seems like, in the United States.
And do you think it's a bigger prevalence rate in the U.S., or do we just hear more about the U.S. because it's covered in the media better, or does this sort of mass shootings, mass attacks happen all over the world, or is there a cultural reason why it happens more in the U.S.?
Look, they definitely happen all over the world. We've had them here in South Africa. We had Tempe military base a number of years ago that had actually two similar mass attacks by a soldier who was disgruntled. We had in Rosebank Police Station in Johannesburg where a dismissed admin clerk who managed to get hold of a firearm shot the station commissioner dead and shot the HR manager dead, the captain, and shot the station commissioner and wounded her. And then as the other police came into that room, he shot himself. So we've had incidences like this in South Africa, not a lot, thankfully.
Yeah.
But you get them all over if you start to actually look. But yes, the U.S. does seem to have a bigger prevalence. Okay, it's a bigger country. That's the one aspect. So yes. Geographically and people-wise.
Yes.
But like I said, there does just seem to be almost like this cultural phenomenon of being a mass shooter. And of course, yes, you can't ignore the fact that there are that guns are more freely available. Now, we have to be very careful. It's a person who picks up a firearm. It's a person who picks up those keys and drives the car into a crowd. To not say the firearm is the problem. If we didn't have firearms, we wouldn't have these problems. Because as you saw, we have people using vehicles. We have people. Mm-hmm. The Boston bombers made homemade bombs. So there are lots of different ways that you can commit this type of mass violent incident. But I do think that if you have a very, very ease ability, if you want to use that word, of being able to get hold of firearms, that doesn't help. But that isn't the key to stopping these types of mass violence incidences.
Yeah, and I do think a lot of the times us sitting in South Africa constantly hearing about it in the news, and you hear how easy it is in the US to get hold of a firearm, it's easy to blame it on that. It's easy to say that, but I can just go into a supermarket, buy myself a gun and ammunition, but it can't be blamed on that. Like you said, they used other things as well, not just the firearms.
Like a car or a truck.
Exactly.
does more damage.
People have flown planes into buildings, if you remember, in 9/11, etc. So there's lots of ways you can do it. And unfortunately, the internet now, you can Google, how to make a bomb, and you'll quite easily find lots of examples, and people go out and do that. So there's lots of ways people can do it. I mean, the vehicle accidents, if you look, actually, the one that took place in France in 2016 killed 86 people. And I think injured 200 more. And the Las Vegas shooting I was speaking about, which was the largest shooting in the United States, I think to date, only, and I say only in inverted commas, killed 60.
Yeah.
So, a vehicle can kill far more.
Sure.
A bomb can kill far more. But yes, if you have this ease ability to get firearms, you'll probably in general just have high firearms crime rates and increased rates of these things taking place.
Do you think the media plays a role in the way that it's portrayed or reported, and that motivates people to also want to be in that limelight?
Definitely. Media, social media particularly. There is a sort of tendency now with some journalists and some media houses not to mention the name of the offender, so as to not glorify the person's name. And they'll just refer to the shooter from this town, the Buffalo shooter, or this shooter or that shooter, to not give people this mass sort of credit. Now, that's never going to work 100% because names come out and social media is there. So definitely, but I do think that helps people get the popularity. The guy from Virginia Tech who committed that mass, which was the biggest mass shooting until Pulse nightclub in Florida a few years later, he actually mailed in between the first shooting. He shot at one of the dormitories at the university. He went off and posted his pre-prepared manifesto videos to one of the news agencies. So obviously, then he went back to the campus and shot everybody in the lecture halls. And of course, a day or two later, this package arrives at the media house, and bits of that are available on the internet. So definitely, they use it to get them the publicity that they want in death. And unfortunately, it does help create the subculture of that's a career path for me. If I feel disaffected or not like my life's going anywhere and lost and rejected, I can come out of that and become somebody famous.
A lot of the times with the school shootings as well, when they go back to the shooters' social media pages, you will see that they've been kind of sending leads out, or they've been warnings. And I think a lot of people are just disregarding it. Parents saying, oh, no, my child will never do that. Or, no, my child is just seeking attention. He's been shy. He's been bullied at school. But I think it's a very fine line from parents' side, is when do you take those warnings seriously, or is it just a child seeking attention?
And absolutely. There's actually a term for that. It's called leakage. And what you find is that the overwhelming majority of people commit a mass violence incident, probably not the ISIS type, so they tend to be pretty operationally quiet.
Yes. Yeah.
But these other people have started in the lead weeks. I mean, Morne Harmsa, the guy from the Krugersdorp school back in, I think it was 2007, who went with us, for a year before he'd been telling people, I'm going to kill people at school.
Yeah, it increased.
I mean, we have the SMSs, and that's very characteristic of these pre-incident, grievance-fueled mass violence incidences. Mm. And we're not talking about vague things that afterwards, oh, that makes so much sense, but beforehand it was very vague. We're talking about quite clear indications about referring to wanting to harm people, making sort of these very clear indications that should have aroused people's attention, but people either don't take it seriously, they don't know what to do with it, or they tell people who don't know what to do with it. And that's one of our biggest challenges, is to say, you know what, it's not for you to decide whether this is serious or not. Because you're not trained, you know, as a parent, you're not trained, or as a fellow student, you're not trained, or as a teacher, you're not trained. So rather refer it to someone else who can look at it and decide, you know what, there isn't anything to worry about in this case, so we don't have to do anything. Or there is something we have to worry about, we need to intervene and help this person. And we must focus it, change the emphasis from reporting to get someone in trouble, you know, and get them kicked out of the school, or and to get a criminal case, and to rather report to support. Because clearly, this is the idea. Those are the verbalizations of someone who is in great need of assistance and intervention. So, you know, rather that we create the culture of tell people so that the right people can look at it and help and intervene. So we help that person not do something tragic, which of course prevents their being victims.
Yeah.
So that's what we really need to. So, but you know, unfortunately, schools are very, very slow, and even businesses. I know very few businesses in South Africa that even have threat assessment teams. There are a few. And schools, it's even worse. There's very few that have even any concept of a threat assessment and threat management as something that should be in, you know, the school environment.
Well, we want to thank you so much for your time. We're going into the news almost, but before we leave, there's one question I wanted to ask you. What was the experience for you to spend some time with the FBI and the BAU when you were there previously, as if I read correctly?
Yes, I think if I recall, it was about 2013, 14. I had a very fortunate enough to spend a week.
Sure.
And there's actually about three or four different units. The one focuses on threats, like we've been talking about. That was fascinating. And that helped cement my interest in understanding threats and intervening. And then one that focuses on children crimes, then adult crimes, and sort of terrorism crimes. So it's very fascinating and just, you know, interesting to meet and hear about the problems that they're dealing with and how we deal with it and how some of it, you know, is very similar and actually where we fit in comparison to our skills and their sort of skill level. So, yeah, that was a great opportunity.
I can just imagine.
Appreciative of the police for offering me.
Sure. Well, we want to thank you for your time. It's been a privilege speaking to you, and good luck for 2025, and thanks for all the wonderful work that you've done and your time that you spend on with us here on Groot FM.
Thanks, Alexander, Romania. Thanks to all the listeners.
Thank
Great. You. Speak to you soon. Bly ingeskakeld. Yeah. Dit is amper tyd vir jou nuus om 4:30.
Groot FM 90.5.